nanohub.org.
Online simulation and more for nanotechnology.
Just start defining very basic concepts. We defined the concept of charge or capacity, if you may. Right, charge. Okay, which in this case we use the symbol Q. And we find that it has units of coulombs. Okay, and typically people refer to this in the literature in terms of milliamps times hour. Okay, and it will be clear, and I'll remind you in a second about that. We also use the concept of, define the concept of voltage, which I guess physically, think of it as the amount of charge, the amount of energy that you need to move a charge. So let's see, in this case it has, we use the symbol E, if I remember correctly. I guess it's all on video, so if I use the wrong sign, you can go back and check. And has people refer to it as volts, or joules per coulomb. Okay, that's basically, volts is the quantity that everyone uses. We also define the quantity of current, electrical current. Okay, when this one has units of coulombs per second, and typically people use the units here, amperes. So if you multiply, if you know how long it takes for a battery to be discharged, you can think of the, in this case, the current times time, which gives you amps times hour, and in this case TF is defined as the time to discharge or the time to recharge, right? If you're using the same description to recharge a battery. Okay, we define the concept of energy and energy density. And I can't remember the symbol, but since I use E for that one, I'm going to use U. And this one has to have units of joules. Okay, if you look at it, voltage times charge has units of joules. So typically people refer to the energy of the battery as how much voltage the battery can deliver to you times how much charge. Or if you use that other relationship over there, right, given the current that you extract, how long it takes for that battery to deplete or to recharge. Okay, given a potential that you extract from that. The units that people typically use here are also not in joules. Commercially, people use watt hours. Okay, you can see in this case, this one has units of joules per second times time, gives you energy. And finally, power and power density, which I'm going to arbitrarily call P. And this is how much energy you get out of a battery per second. Notice that they're not the same thing as compared to energy. They're related, obviously, but they're not the same thing, because if I can only extract all my energy in my battery in 1 second, it's not the same if I extract the same amount of energy per unit second if my battery depletes in 1 minute as compared to if it depletes in 2 or 3 hours, right? This basically gives you the voltage times the charge divided by how long it gives me that energy per unit second, or how long it maintains that energy per second every second. So if I use the expression above, really gives me the voltage times the current, right? And of course, you can see the higher the current, I get more power, but it'll also discharge in a short amount of time. Okay? And, well, this one is still being expressed in watts. Okay? Any questions on that? Again, many of these are very obvious concepts, right? At some level, you already know all of them, but now we're just laying them out in the context of a battery so that we can actually start discussing how we introduce that into a design. And the first step to start thinking about how to design a battery is we're trying to make a material selection. So this is up here. You can see a chart in the spirit of Ashby. In this case, you can see the voltage that a battery delivers you, or a specific material delivers to you as a function of the charge, right? The capacity. And notice that in this case, it's capacity in per kilogram, and you can see here it has units of ampere hour, right? And in greens you can see the anode materials, in reds you can see the cathode materials. Notice that in this plot, cathode materials are bunching up around between 4 and 2.6 volts. Okay, historically, the first set of batteries were lithium manganese oxide based. So you can see why, right? You can see very high voltages, 4.1, 4.2. Of course, we've gone through several alloys, so now you can find batteries that have been alloyed with that. Lithium manganese cobalt oxide, lithium manganese, some have iron, some magnesium, some have aluminum, right? You can see them, all of them being used and added, right? And you also see here, for example, some of the vanadium oxides and lithium iron phosphates. Down here you can see the slightly lower voltage. Each of them have their own benefits, there are advantages and disadvantages. And down here, notice that they're not exactly below the cathode materials. They're more actually to the right. In fact, you can see that the bulk of them are around 200, right? 200 ampere hours per kilogram, right? Very far to the right, around 400 and even all the way over there to 5,000, maybe 6,000. You have all the anode material. So there's a mismatch of what you can put in it. And why do we care about this? Because whatever anode material you pick, you're going to have to shuttle your lithium for this chart from this electrode or any of these electrodes to the other ones, right? So you can see it's not the same to put material from here to here than from here to there, right? And just to give you an idea how you would use this plot, I'm going to make a sketch of the same plot here. Okay, again, here you have capacity, and on this side you have voltage. I'm going to try to be consistent with the symbols today, right? And around here you have the force. I'm going to make a range here until around 2. Put here the cathodes. Cathode materials live up here. Okay, and the anode materials, which are somewhere between, put here the 0. And it basically around 1.5-ish. Okay, of course, this is in volts. Okay, they are actually spread out across the board. Okay, now, if you're going to build a battery, you have to start picking your materials. So let's just say, for the sake of argument, that I'll lithium manganese oxide battery, right, which will have a voltage around 4.2 based on this plot. So let's just say I pick that one. And I want to pick an anode material. Let's just say, for sake of argument, I pick graphite, which has a voltage around 0.5 and based on this plot, and a capacity of around 400. Put it here, 400. Okay, pick that one, which is around, its capacity is around 150. Okay, and again, this is in amp hours per kilogram. Okay, so the voltage that this battery is going to deliver you is the work that takes to go from that voltage to that voltage. It's not going to be the same voltage if you pick, for example, you see up there, lithium, right? You have lithium over here. Whose voltage is effectively zero? In this plot, you can see you'll get a slightly, you get 500 extra millivolts of voltage, right? More joules per coulomb for lithium. Right, this, okay, here you have 0.5 volts gap. But this other gap over here, it's a big gap, which I also want to talk about, which is the difference between 400 and 4,000 would be 3,600. Okay. Ideally, you would think, why don't we just make all the batteries with pure lithium as the anode? Right? That's the first thought, right? It would be great if I could make all of them with this material out here. It gives me a very high capacity. It gives me a very low voltage and thus delivers a big, wide energy per every charge I move. Okay, again, a lot of energy out of that. That's what you would like, ideally. In practice, however, there are all sorts of materials issues associated with each chemistry. Okay, let me point at it. Lithium by itself, okay, as much as it has very high capacity, okay, it also has these reactions occurring as you discharge the cell, or especially as you recharge it, you can start forming dendrites. Basically, instead of the material to going back to its original states, it starts forming these arborescent structures in the electrode, and as they form, the electrode will become unstable, and if one of these arborescent structures touches the counter electrode, that is the cathode, at that moment the entire battery will undergo an internal short circuit, and the whole battery will die, okay? Or it can catch fire. You certainly don't want that. So you can see this material, lithium, sounds great, right? It's in theory, looks like a great material, but it has all these other materials issues associated with it people are still trying to address. In fact, this is probably one of the grand challenges in battery technology, right? To try to make this material not form these arborescent structures, these dendrites. And instead, what people do is to focus in these other materials like graphite, which are much cheaper. You can see its capacity is basically 10 times lower. But I guess it doesn't matter as much. Why? Because the capacity of the cathode materials is still almost half the value of the ones in the anode materials. Okay? So you can see there's a big difference there. Now, if you look at this bit over here, hang on, I just lost my chalk. If you look at this bit over here, okay, what you want in a battery is a battery that has the highest voltage and delivers you the largest amount of charge, which means in this plot that fills in as large space in this map as possible. Okay? Means you want all your cathodes as far to the right and as far up as you can, and all your anodes as far down and also to the right as you can. Okay? Why? Because it doesn't matter how the capacity of that is, it's always going to be limited with that. You can compensate, and we'll go over those mathematical details today, right? These gaps turn out to be very important to specifying the capacity. Okay? Think of it, right? It's not the same if I move 10 people from, say, this room, 1103, to, say, 1010, right? You know how much people fits in 1010, right? How much is things like 300 people, right? As compared to 30, right? You can see over there, the capacity, we have too much capacity, right? As compared to bring those 300 people up here, right? The same thing, right? If I have my anode completely full and I try to put it in any of the cathodes, you can see the problem of doing that, right? We won't fit it, right? We will have this dead amount of lithium ions we won't be able to shuttle into the cathode because the capacity of the cathode materials is so much low. So the only thing you can do, just like you do in any other room, you have to put more chairs, right? Which means you cannot mess with the chemistry, but you can make the electrode thicker, right? Where you can put more material so that they can actually shuttle there. But because its density is lower, then that means your electrode on one side will become much thicker than the other one. Okay? And of course, I'm talking in very, very vague terms, right? We really want to start putting math on that. And, let's do that, right? Let me erase this bit over here. And we can start discussing it. Any questions at this point? Yes? I'll get to that in 1 minute. Yes, that's a very good question. And the question was, for the people at Crane that probably didn't hear the question, why are there no cathode materials with high capacity, right? That's what you ask. So, it does have to do with the atomistics. It does have to do with the chemistry. When you are considering a pure lithium electrode, okay, basically, you are basically building the unit cell, right, the pure lithium unit cell with, and you're packing there the amount of charge as much as you can, right? It's really not being dissolved into anything. And if you remember, right, all of these materials, actually, you can see all of the materials up here, okay, they're all host materials, okay? If you remember, right, let's just use LiX in this side, Mn2O4, just for the sake of argument, okay, you basically are bringing in a lithium ion and an electron, okay, and you have to dissolve it in here. So you can see you're already, the manganese oxide host is already occupying a space, right, a volume, and that definitely has to drop your capacity, right? You cannot get more capacity than the one the host material gives you. And of course, one of the obvious things to look at is what would be the structure that would allow me to host as many lithium ions per unit volume as possible. If you find that, of course, these also weigh, right? These also have some this also contribute with their weight and volume, right? You want these to be light and you want to be packed, but so that when the lithium comes, they open up and host the material reversibly. Okay? If you undergo a phase transformation as you put a material in there that is not reversible, that will also kill your capacity, right? Because you won't recover it. So you clearly want a chemistry that allows you to do that, and that's really the problem. In fact, if you look at this, okay, chemically speaking, this host and any host has really a solubility limit. Right? There's a maximum amount of lithium, or in general, in any type of reversible reaction, there's any type of ion that you can put into this host material. There's a maximum amount. If you overcome the maximum amount, it'll transition from lithium manganese oxide, LiMn2O4, to say LiMnO2, right? It'll just undergo, it'll expand its lattice to be able to accommodate more. Okay, so there is a solubility limit. We can call that solubility limit CT. And just to keep track of the units, let's just say this one has units of moles per meter cube. Right, basically, how much many moles of lithium I can accommodate in a meter cube of manganese oxide or cobalt oxide, right? You pick, right? What material you would like to be as your host. And you can see here, right, that the more you are to the right, okay, the more capacity you get. And notice that there's an interesting trend, right, that as the capacity increases, also the voltage that you can put in there decreases. So you can win, or at least in this plot you can win. This, just so you know, this plot is 11 years old. I'm sure there are new materials that have come up. Okay? And there's, of course, now materials that have voltages higher than 4 volts. People are also exploring materials with 6 volts and 5 volts. And ultra high voltage, if you may, right? And there are advantages, of course, to using materials that have lower voltage. And actually, you can see it here already. Li, LIMN204, when it phase transitions, doesn't transition to a voltage that has 0 volts. It actually transitions from 4 volts, 4.2 volts, to something that has around 3.1 volts. And you can still put lithium in it. Of course, if you completely filled LIMN02, then the voltage either will drop to another plateau, okay, or it will completely, you will completely lose that, the potential that that material can give you, right? So, and those are the material selections aspects there, right? And the same here with graphite, right? And graphite, again, is the most widely used electrode material these days. Why? Because graphite is cheap, right? It's easy to process, well, in comparison to other fancy chemistries. And as you see here, right, it actually gives you a very reasonable capacity, and it matches many of them very, very well. Okay, well, that's what we got there. Now, what I would like to do is to relate this number to this number, the solubility limit to the charge, so that we can actually start making some decisions there. So let's see. Typically, well, I'm just going to start writing it. The charge, and just for the sake of argument, let's start with the cathode, right? The cathode material, I would expect indeed to be proportional to the solubility limit, right? It should be proportional to the, how much charge I can put in a material should be proportional to how much lithium or whatever ion you're using, in this case to move your battery, you can put, you can dissolve into the host lattice, unless, of course, it's pure lithium, in which case is really the molar volume of lithium, of pure lithium, which you can obviously pull out from the periodic table if you want it. And you can see why it will never get higher than lithium metal, right? It's because pure lithium is how much you can pack together, right? Unless you can find another structure where you can shuttle it to and still end up with pure lithium, well, you have to host it somehow, okay? Now, this one has units of coulombs. This one over here has units of moles per meter cube. So the first thing that comes to mind is I want to multiply that by the volume of my cell, okay? How much volume my cell has, which so that the product can give me, in this case, total number of moles, okay? And if I multiply that by Avogadro's number, it gives me the total number of lithium atoms, if you may, that I can actually store in that material. Okay, and if I multiply that by the electronic charge times the valence of that ion, okay, it gives me the total number of coulombs that I can put there. Right, and again, just to rephrase the whole thing, right. This whole number gives me the total number of moles times the Avogadro's number gives me total number of atoms times the electronic charge gives me the total number of coulombs that I can store in that material. And that pretty much finishes it, except then here's a side concept that people in the battery industry use a lot. The electronic charge, which it's a universal constant, times Avogadro's number, the product, actually, the Avogadro's number is also a universal constant. So this number, F, is called Faraday's constant. And you can think of it as how many coulombs you will find in a mole of stuff. Okay? And well, in this case, I can rewrite this thing. Okay, in fact, I'm going to write it after the line. So I can write the charge in my electrode. It's going to be the solubility limit times Faraday's constant times the valence of my electrode. Oh, of course, times the volume. So I can talk about how much charge per unit volume I can put in. Okay. It's a very humble result, but also a very powerful one. You already know here what to, it also tells you what to do to select your first battery, at least battery material. You want materials with high solubility limit. And materials whose ion has a large valence. Okay, for batteries, of course, the valence is set to 1. Okay, for lithium-ion batteries, there are other batteries that have different ions. You can see if you find a chemistry where you can shuttle between two electrons and where you can find a high solubility limit and a high valence, you can get twice the charge per unit volume. So you might not win on how much you can host, but you can double that in theory with respect to lithium if you have a valence of +2 or +3 or +4. Okay, and this is also where many of the new research is occurring these days, trying to find new chemistries besides lithium. You have also magnesium, you have sodium, and you can see here what the idea is, right? Just try to find the right chemistry to do that. Okay, any questions on this? Okay. Let's see. Oh, we're doing great. Let's see what I got here. Okay, so the ones that I am pointing out here on the board, on the screen, I'm sorry, the two for your cell phone, for example, I will have no doubt that you will have a lithium cobalt oxide based chemistry and your anode is made out of graphite. Why? Because cobalt is known to have a high energy density. And graphite is so stable in that sense. Other chemistries, such as lithium iron phosphate, you can see that it has a lower voltage. In fact, it has a whole range of voltages, and it has a slightly higher capacity in this plot. And the reason that they do that is because you want to have, even though you may have a lower voltage, you can get more energy per unit second. Okay. You will not put, at least you wouldn't consciously put a lithium cobalt oxide battery in your, wireless hedge trimmer, right? Instead you want to use a chemistry that has high power. Basically, you get a lot of energy per unit second for a long amount of time. Lithium cobalt oxide doesn't provide that. It gives you a lot of energy, but not a lot of energy per unit second, right? So that's one of the reasons. And of course, we have lithium down there, which is still an elusive goal, and you can see if you manage to control that one, then you could make your electrodes much thinner and thus pack much more. Okay, so it's we'll discuss those details again. So this is the expression I just showed you, that for each phase you have the valence, the solubility limit, the volume associated, and of course that universal constant that will always be there. Okay, which is what you will have in the notes as they're posted online. Okay, and from there, then you do have indeed a quantity that you can start engineering from, but you can see it all boils down to going back to that plot that you saw. Okay, and the units of this, of course, have to be milliamperes per hour. Okay, and for the device itself, however, what you will get really is given a cross-sectional area, how much charge per unit second you're extracting. And in fact, to this point, we're making several assumptions there. Okay, and I'm just going to make those assumptions, a couple of those assumptions explicit, because as we move forward, I will start relaxing those assumptions. But in this analysis, one of the assumptions that we're making is that if you have voltage versus time, the voltage is assumed right now that it's going to remain fixed for every electrode until you reach the finishing of the discharge time. At that point, the voltage is going to drop to zero. Okay? And that's the time we're expecting the voltage will, the battery will be depleted. Right? In practice, this is not exactly true. Okay? And of course, that happens with the cathode material. With the anode material, we expect that you have a lower voltage down here based on the plot that we have over there, and it's going to remain the same until you reach the discharge time or the recharge time, and then the voltage is going to shoot up so that the difference of both of them have to be zero, right? And it's this difference that we care about. Okay? Okay, now, in a real battery, however, it's not made out of just pure phases, right? Pure components. You actually have to process these things in layers, in particle form. And here, this is just a cross section, just to remind you, right? You can here you have actually a graphite anode. You can see the spaces in between. You can see particles of different shapes and sizes on the anode side. And same in the cathode. You can see particles. You can see clusters of particles, of small particles, surrounded with very large particles like this one over there. And all of them are going to change the capacity of the cell. Okay. In fact, if we go back to our relationship, to this relationship we have over here, really, we have to start looking more at that component, right, at the volumetric component, because obviously, if you focus, say, on the cathode again, right, you will not get the same amount of charge if you have this whole thing to be a single crystal, say, of lithium manganese oxide, that if you have that whole thing in powder form, which is what you see there. Okay, so what do we do? Well, we need to revise that relationship. Okay, so in this case, well, we have that the charge in the cathode is going to be the solubility limit times Z times F times V. Okay? And in this case, the volume of the cathode is going to be the cross-sectional area that is coming out of the plane times the thickness of that electrode. Okay? That's the first thing. Very obvious. It's just geometrical. The problem with that is that, well, this is not telling me incorporating any effects of the geometry. Right? What I do know is that also the total volume of the battery, of the electrode, is the volume of the cathode particles, or let's just call it more generally, active material. Plus whatever else you have in the battery. Right? You have the volume of the electrolyte, which actually, let me rewrite this. The electrolyte carbon mixture is just whatever's there. So you can think of this as a filler material that I will talk about when the right time comes, right? And the volume of graphite, which is where the electrons are traveling inside the cathode material, right? This one really constitutes, it's a complex mixture of electrolyte, binders, and all sorts of components that people put there, right? And the graphite part is because while the lithium is being shuttled between the anode and the cathode, that the electrons are traveling through the outside, in between the particles, you have to have a medium so that the electrons can flow and travel and meet and react with the lithium ions. So you have to put an electronic conductive medium, and this is Kelly conductive okay, and that's where the electrons will travel. If you don't put the graphite by itself, any graphite at all, what's going to happen is that you will not get you will not get any contribution from electron transport. Basically, the reaction will not proceed because electrons will not reach any space, any place in the electrode. If you don't put any electrolyte, lithium ions will not flow through between the particles either. And of course, if you don't put any active material, then you really don't have a battery, right? So, really, what we want here in this charge that we can put in the battery shouldn't be really the total volume, should really be the volume of the active material. Okay? Because that's how much, that fraction is how much is actually doing something there. Okay? Now, what I can tell you that happens here, okay, is, I'm gonna do it in this other corner over here, is that actually the volume of the active material is going to be the total volume minus the volume of the filler. All I'm doing there is just solving for the active material minus the volume of the graphite. Okay. And what I can do here then is realize, well, really what I have here is I'm not going to actually control the total volume. What I can do is put volume fractions of each contribution. So I'm going to say the volume of the filler is going to be a quantity called, this quantity is the volume fraction of filler, okay, which takes numbers between 0 and 1. Okay, basically what I'm doing here is multiplying that by the total volume. So you can see if epsilon F is equal to 1, basically the entire thing, the entire battery is basically filled with filler. And I can do the same thing with graphite. Okay, and I can substitute it in there. Okay, and of course I can collect terms, and using the magic of the blackboard, I can do that. Okay, and put it back in my expression, which I'm going to write over here. Okay, and then I can say the charge in my electrode is going to be, again, the solubility limit times Z times F times the volume of my active material, which is over here, which is that times 1 minus epsilon filler minus epsilon of the graphite phase. Maybe I should just, instead of calling G, I should call it C for carbon. Yeah, I think that's a much better description. There you go. So again, this is for electronic conductive, lithium conductives, and binders. And of course, it's basically deviations from that that gives me the overall contributions. I do know that the volume is still the cross-sectional area times the thickness, so I can go and substitute it in here. And since the area really corresponds to how far out of the plane this cross-section actually propagates backwards, then I can write like this. See, and now I include it at least without, in the absence of losses, this is how much charge per unit area I can put in my cell. As we were expecting, okay, the larger the solubility limit, the more charge I can put in my composite electrode. The larger the balance, the more charge I can put in there. The less fillers and the less graphite, I can put more charge, but it will probably be harder to use. And here's an additional variable. The thicker I make my electrode, the thicker I make it, the more total charge per unit area I can put in there. And, well, I don't know if you can see it here. Actually, you should be able to see it there, right? This thickness over here is not the same as that thickness over there. There's a difference there. There's a difference in thickness. Okay. And for that, there's a quantity. I should do it here on the side because there's not much space there. That people have come up with. Then I'm going to have the break, which is basically something called, put it here, the capacity ratio. Okay? And basically is the ratio of how much charge I can put in my cathode divided by how much charge I can put in my anode. Okay? It should be very straightforward to substitute that. meaning this equation tells you the how balanced your electrode is. Okay, the more lithium you can put in your cathode, you have to balance it by the solubility limit in your anode and its thickness, or the other way around, right? Especially since you can put more lithium in the anode, the more lithium you can, you're able to put in the anode, given a specific thickness of the anode, whatever chemistry you pick for your cathode, you have to balance it out by its thickness so that basically as you shuttle, say, from one electrode to the other one, there's enough space to put those electrodes back and forth. Okay? If instead one of them is much larger than the other one, what we'll have is that they won't fit as you shuttle them in one direction, and that will correspond to loss charge, because the moment you cannot put them in, the reaction will stop, right? Or in the other direction, you will empty all the electrons, all the lithium ions, from one electrode into the other one, and then you won't be able to use it either. Why? Because it's unbalanced. So in practice, or let's put it here, ideally, you want this number R to be as close to one as possible, ideally. In practice, what happens is that you pick R to be greater than one. Okay, you want to put more in the cathode than in the anode. Okay, in practice. Okay, and we'll talk about implications of this after the break. And well, I guess we'll chat in 5 minutes. Okay, any questions on this to this point? No. Okay, just to recap the last first half. Okay, we have a thickness for anode and cathode, and obviously ions are being shuttled between anion and cathode and back. So the more available spaces, which means the more stuff you can dissolve into the host material in the cathode, the more effective charge you will have, and the same for the anode, right? If you have a very thick anode and a very thin cathode, the limitation of your electrode will be given by how many ions you can store in the opposite electrode, and the same on the way back, right? If you have a very thin anode and a very thick cathode, there will be so much you can put in there, increasing with that the weight, the dead weight of your cell. Ideally, what you want is all the electrodes in the anode, all the useful ones, as much as you can, completely move to the cathode and back, leaving as little as you can unshuttled, right? Everything you want to be going from one room to the next, if you may. Right, with leaving as few as you can, just always store away. There's always going to be some loss, and there's even going to be some fading, meaning as time passes, the amount of ions that go from one to the next, one side to the next, are going to start dropping, right? So that at the end of the life of the battery, very few ions are going to be moving back and forth. Okay, based on that, we just looking at very, very simple concepts, a relationship between how much you can store for a specified chemistry and the thickness of that electrode. And of course, the same applies for the thickness of the counter electrode. And based on that, we defined a quantity called the capacity ratio, which if everything were perfectly balanced, you would like everything from the cathode to move to the anode, which means that the effective use charge, and of course this is assuming everything is removed from one host and put in its entirety of the other one, should be balanced out. So in practice, R sub C, the capacity ratio, ideally has to be equal to one. In practice and historically, we have allowed to put more charge in the cathode than in the anode. Why? Because many of these chemistries, okay, if you completely deplete them from, especially the lithium chemistries, you completely deplete them of lithium, what's going to happen is that the host could be very reactive. Lithium cobalt oxide has been, for example, a very well-known chemistry to do that. So you always leave a little sliver there of extra material, because if it's completely depleted, you just need traces of oxygen and the whole thing can go. Okay, and that would be bad. Okay, so typically what people do is they just leave an extra amount just based on that, okay? Well, that's basically what we did in basically in this first half. Okay, and well, that's the relationship. So you can see that you not only have to balance chemistries, as you saw in the original plot, you also have to balance thicknesses, and you can actually use the thicknesses to counteract for how much stuff you can dissolve in each one. So typically, and it shouldn't be surprising, the cathode, it's typically twice as thick with respect to the anode, of course, assuming everything else is the same. Why? Because the solubility limit of lithium in the anode, as you saw from that plot, I'm going to refer to that in a second again, is usually twice as much as the one on the cathode. And just to show you that, right, we're just going to break out and go back to that same slide. Right, you see it there. Right, you can see that's the anode, right, the typical graphite anode, which is around 400. Okay, while the numbers are shifted. I think this 200 should be over here and this 400 over there. But if you look at a typical cathode, you go from the 400s to the 200s, so that you can see you have to make the cathode much thicker, right? Which is what you typically expect. Okay, and that's where we are. Now I want to see what is the impact of that on the energy and energy density, and we're going to do it over here. And again, all we're doing here to this moment is just choose chemistries given that that battery materials are put in particle form. If you change the way you pack battery materials from particles to something else, you can get different types of performances based on that. But you also change the entire game. The energy density should really be how much current you're putting in times the voltage, right? This gives you the instantaneous power, right? In principle, the current could be varying with time, and the voltage in response will be varying with time, right? And if I integrate that from zero or from T zero to the discharge time, that'll tell you how much total energy this battery can store. And if you divide that by the total weight of the battery, right, that will give you the energy density of the cell. Okay, of the cell. So in this case, assuming that the voltage is constant across the whole discharge rate, we can put that E over there, and the integral of I times dt gives you the charge. So I can use the charge here I should put here useful charge. Basically, how much is actually moved from one electrode to the other one, right, divided by the mass. And so I can grab my relationship over there and do it in ignoring the effect of the area, but I can just put here, really this would be the ideal voltage, should put it here too, times the charge that is actually useful. Which charge will that actually you think will be useful? The largest charge? The charge of the cathode? The charge of the anode? Which is the charge that you think from those charges, because we have calculated two charges, right? We have calculated the charge of the cathode, which has basically all C's over here, okay? And the charge of the anode, which has the same form, except that has a different solubility limit and a different thickness. Which one will actually be the one that determines the useful charge? Why the anode? Yes, but, okay, if you remember, right, I could have a big room, right, my anode, and I can have a little room, my cathode, right, and if I move people from my little room to my big room, how much effective charge I can move will be dependent on how many people I can actually put in my little room. Say that again? Right, yes, by having more total useful mass, I agree with that. By having more total useful mass, you will have more charge associated with that. Now, I think what you really want to say there is that it would really correspond to the minimum of the charge in the cathode and the charge in the anode. Right, because if I take the charge of the smallest cell and put it in the other one, it will fit, right? But if I grab all the charge from the cathode from the electrode that I can store the most and try to fit it in the little electrode, it won't fit. Okay, and you can see, and that's why the capacity ratio is so important, because you want to make sure that you're not too far off. Okay, you want to be able to always put everything in the catheter when you discharge it, because that will maximize how much charge you are extracting. And when you recharge it, it doesn't matter if you have extra seats in the anode, provided that you move all the charge from the catheter back into the anode. Okay, that's and that's a huge deal. And not only that, let me just go back one slide there, right, just to think of the electrodes and show you again this relationship. Okay, well, even if you, and you can see it becomes a at this point, you start having this now new dimensions of how to design your battery, because you can make your anode to be very thin, for example, okay, and your cathode very thick, right? If you make my cathode, if I made the cathode very thick, then actually the limiting rate is going to become the anode, right? Because then I won't have enough space in my anode to fit my ions from my cathode back in, right? Or if I pick my anode really thick, and my cathode really thin, then the limitation is going to be my cathode, right? So, and again, if I pick a chemistry where I can dissolve very lithium, very small number of ions, then that's going to be my limitation too. So you can see it'll boil down to which one is the smallest of the, which of the two electrodes can fit the smallest number of ions. So you can see I already lost a lot. My energy is going to be determined by what electrode can store the least number of ions. Divided, obviously, by the mass. And if you remember, right, the voltage, the ideal voltage, is not going to be the voltage of one electrode, but the difference between the cathode minus the anode. Okay? So you can see here how I should go back to that slide again, just to make the comparison. This is where having a board and a projector is so handy, because if you now see here, you know the material selection problem becomes much more obvious given our energy relationship. Really, you can see it really becomes the area in the map that you see up there, because I really want to use materials that have the largest voltage difference, okay? And those that, given my relationship, will give me the largest charge for both cathode and anode, because the smallest of those is going to be determined the capacity of the cell. I can, however, compensate by making electrodes thicker. But there, of course, there's some shortcomings to that as well. Okay. So as you can see here, right, for lithium, manganese oxide, and graphite, you can see there that really the energy density is going to be determined by this difference, and the energy density is also going to be determined by that difference. So really it's this space over here where the area in this plot is what determines really the theoretical energy density of the cell. And of course you can compensate by increasing the thickness of the cathode. You can move that one already over here so that you get a much larger area. Okay? So you can get rid of this loss, right? Basically, there's a loss there from not accounting for both of them. Okay? So, that's one relationship. I'm gonna keep that one up there. The same should apply for the average power density. Notice that it's not the same as the instantaneous power density. The instantaneous power density is the power that a cell is giving you at one specific instant, and the average power density is how much energy the total cell gave you across the entire discharge time. So basically, power density is going to be given by U divided by TF, okay, which I can rewrite as EC minus EA. The minimum of QC QA over the mass of the cell. We have not said anything about the mass of the cell yet. Oh, and I'm sorry. And TF. Okay. Average. Okay. Okay, and well, you know what each relationship is there. We could read it from the plot, and you can start seeing that from here. There's an obvious homework problem that will come up, right? Because now we actually have something, you know, tangible that we can do. And what you would like, well, is you would like your battery to be as light as possible, right? Because the more mass you have, the less power you get, and the less energy per unit density you get. Okay? So, let's start looking at that. The total mass is going to be, well, it's just the mass of the individual components, right? So you have the mass of the cathode material plus the mass of the filler plus the mass of the graphite. Okay, I was using C, right? Plus, and it doesn't end there. You have the mass of the contacts, the mass of the casing, and every other component that assembles your overall battery. Okay, this is the contributions that are allowing that you can engineer with, that you can play with to increase power and energy, because that's what enter the numerator on this. The numerator of these two relationships, and this one is packaging. It's a huge industry of that by itself, of course, to keep to improve safety, contacts. You know, all of that. It's interest that part. From the perspective of increasing power and energy, you can think of this one as dead weight, but this is as important as the second one is as important as the first one, because, well, you still need to carry your cell, right? You still need to sell it in some way to people, right? So this part, you want to make it also, as you can see, as light as possible, and this part can actually also increase the price of your battery by huge amounts, because there's a lot of science that has to go into this. The rule of thumb until very recently was that this part was basically proportional to this part. And so the rule of thumb is whatever weight you get here, double it, and that gives you that contribution. Okay, that's rule of thumb, okay? Yeah, I think you can do a much better job if you went through all the different components, because every single contribution has its own weight. Okay, now if I were to write a little bit more about this here, I guess I can populate a little bit more that contribution. The total mass is probably going to be the density of the cathode material times the volume fraction of that. We know how that goes, right? The density of the filler times the volume of the filler. The density of the graphite times the volume occupied by the graphite. By the graphite. And since I arbitrarily declared, that's times two. Okay? Now we wrote a relationship less than an hour ago where we said that the volume of the active material was one, was a total volume minus one minus epsilon filler minus epsilon of graphite for each phase, right? And so then I have here, I can do the same for the other ones. So I get active material times V times 1 minus epsilon filler minus epsilon graphite plus a rho filler V times epsilon filler plus a rho graphite times the volume times epsilon graphite, right? This whole thing times two, right? And, well, I can just regroup that, and you can see that you care a lot about not only the contributions of the filler and the graphite and the active material, but you also care about that all these components to be as light as possible, right? And that, of course, makes you care a lot about how dense your active material is, because you want it to be as light as possible. And of course, I wrote this only for the cathode or for one electrode, but technically you should do the same thing for the anode as well, right? And that adds another line to this equation that it's already long as it is. It's not hard, right? It just becomes tedious, right? To just add all the terms. But, one obvious thing here is that the volume is H times A. Okay, and as you put it in this relationship, you can see that as your electrode becomes thicker, it starts plateauing with respect to how much weight it has, and really what is going to be controlling your contributions is going to be the casing. And you can see here that it's not quite a factor of two. You actually have to account really what the contribution of each component is. Okay? Any questions to this point? Okay, I'm going to jump out of that. I still have 15 minutes. Let's see. I want to talk about this a little bit. I think this is, that's the energy density. That's the ideal contribution. And for the cell, it has to look like that. Okay, for each electrode component, the CTI times 1 minus epsilon I E filler corresponds to the minimum of any of those two. And let's see, in the battery community, you will find this quantity called the maximum theoretical specific energy, which is nothing else but the contribution for that chemistry alone times how much charge you can put in it divided by the molecular weight. Okay? For an entire battery, you can think of as basically what we just wrote, right? This quantity, this energy density that we just defined, really corresponds to the maximum theoretical specific energy of the cell itself by accounting for the geometrical and packaging aspects of it. And that's just a bit of lingo, right? Conceptually, we're just talking about the energies and power contributions. Okay? And, obviously units are watts, hours per kilogram. For power and power density, you can see it's not any difference. It just becomes the same relationship. And in this case, we care enormously for the same reasons of how much energy and how much we can dissolve into the system as well. Okay? As it turned out, and I will have to pick this up on the next class as well, the voltage, if you remember, the voltage that we discussed is not exactly a flat line. In fact, as you can see here, the voltage, as the amount of charge that is being used, is actually dropping in some cases linearly. In some cases, you can see it relaxes, then becomes a little bit flat, and then it drops. You have here all the batteries like lead acid. You can see that this one is pretty flat, and then it drops as well. And depending what chemistry you're looking at, right, you really don't have a constant voltage plateau, and then suddenly it drops, right? It actually, in some cases, you can have, say, intermediate plateaus along the way, which complicates the analysis, which makes this integral that I was telling you a little bit more complicated, because now you have a voltage profile that is going to depend on what instant and what C rate you're extracting out of the battery. So it is very much chemistry dependent, right? Every battery will have a different voltage difference. And here I tried to make the point that these voltages are not absolute values. They're all with respect to some reference. This is how much electrical work you're performing with respect to some reference. I think historically the reference used to be hydrogen. Most recently people have been using lithium as a reference, especially, of course, for lithium batteries. All of these, in order to be able to compare themselves, they have to refer to the same reference. We've been using the problem of lithium manganese oxide and graphite. So on the left, you have the equilibrium voltage, versus fraction of lithium occupied by the lattice, right? You can see that the voltage can be very high up, and the details are such that it's 4 volts almost until it reaches 50% capacity. Then it drops and starts dropping linearly, and then it drops down here to around 2.5 or 3, right? It just basically drops there and it just remains flat
around 3 volts.
Okay, so it's really not as flat as we were expecting. The graphite on the other side, where you can see that's the lithium dissolved in graphite, right? You can see as in this case, when you're discharging a battery, it starts on this end and creeps in this direction, right? It starts, you start filling the cell when you are, when you're discharging. So the voltage starts creeping up. And in order to, so that you can appreciate the difference, I'm just going to make, try to make a comparison here. Let's see. What is the best way to describe this? How do I put this on the board? Okay. I'm just going to do it. I'm going to do it right here. I'm going to need probably 2 pieces of board to do it correctly. But so you can see what the effect, how we care, why we care a lot about that in a cell. So, so you have here, I'm going to start by drawing, sketching out here the, I'm going to keep that one as the lithium, as the voltage of the lithium manganese oxide cell. Just to rephrase myself, this side would be basically empty. Notice that it never reaches the end. And this side would be a completely saturated. Okay. And here, when the anode is full, on this side is when it reaches the solubility limit. And here, the voltage goes up as it's completely delithiated. So if I am discharging my battery, the cathode material, ideally, right, in the absence of a graphite anode, just for, with respect to the pure lithium reference, will look something like this, where I'm going to refer to that as one. Basically here is QC, okay? Ideally, this will be QC. And somewhere halfway there, this is where you have that phase transition that you see up there. Okay, the anode, on the other hand, as I fill my cathode, my anode gets empty, so the voltage starts non-zero, right? It starts at some value over here, right? And it goes up as we go. Here, I am assuming a perfectly balanced cell, so that here, this number is also QA. Okay? It doesn't have to be, right? I can move QA over here. You can see shifting that, this difference in voltage. This basically is EC minus EA. Okay? So when you're discharging your cell, again, you're going from a perfectly filled anode and a perfectly empty cell, okay? The voltage remains flat. As you can see at the beginning, I basically get what you saw on the table on the voltage versus charge plot that you saw at the very beginning of the class, okay? But as time passes, this voltage will start increasing, okay? In fact, there's all sorts of small voltage transitions as you go. There are many phases that lithiated graphite is going through. The same with in this case, the lithium manganese oxide phase. There's a big phase transition occurring there. And then there's another one occurring here. This one actually, I'm not drawing this right because this one should drop to 3. So it really should do that. Okay. And, if I were to try to draw the difference between both of them, basically it would start here. And as time progresses, you can see this voltage starts to increase. And then this difference increases, so. Okay, so it is at this point where, well, I'm assuming that these two voltages are the same. In fact, I draw this wrong because this line, the capacity should match these two. Okay, so this point, it is at this point where those voltages will go to 0. Okay, do you see that? So that's assuming, of course, that the anode and the cathode both start from perfectly complementary charge states. Okay, one of them is completely full and the other one is completely empty. Okay, that's the assumption here. Okay, In practice, you never do that. You never start from a completely full cathode and a completely empty anode, or the other way around. You always leave some space in the anode. There's an amount of charge from the cathode you don't use, and there's a fraction also of charge of the anode you don't use. And you never let the cathode reach this plateau, because this plateau is harder to reverse. There are structural phase transitions here that may induce some stresses. You could have amorphization. You can have all sorts of other side reactions going on here that could completely kill the being able to go back. So you also never allow that. So you don't go in that direction either. Okay? Instead, you play the description would be, you play a game of chicken with your battery. Okay? You try to see how far you can go in that direction and how far you can go in that direction without hitting those irreversible phase transformations. Okay? That is, of course, if you want to make a battery that will last very little, right? If you want to be very conservative, then you don't play chicken at all, right? And then you really bring those ranges even closer. Okay? You bring them closer so that you always are in the useful range, and you can see the closer you are in the usefulness range, the voltage of your cell also drops. Okay? And of course, these differences, these are losses as well. Because think of, to keep the analogy of the room, right, we're saying that we want to move people between this room and 1010, okay, but we always want to leave some people at 1010 and some people over here. Okay, we don't want it, this room completely empty, and we don't want that, also that room also completely empty either. Right, we want to shuttle people from here and back, and always leaving some people behind, and never leaving a completely full room or a completely empty room. Okay, we don't want either. So that also makes our energy density drop, sorry, our capacity drop, and our voltage drop. Okay? So I'm gonna call, and how am I doing in time? Oh, I already ran over. I'm sorry. I will stop right here, and I'll rehash this at the beginning of the Thursday lecture, and then we'll just keep adding details to this design picture. Okay? Thank you guys. You guys have any questions? If not, we'll discuss them on Thursday. Okay? Thank you.